This is a Dog Guide Handlers Australia audio presentation.
Welcome everybody to our first members meeting. It's great to have so many people joining us. As I think Annette said, this is a good crowd. So that's a good start for the year. Keep it up, people. And we have tonight Anna Gigliotti-Spret, who is... she is forward thinking dog training and mobility. So unless Anna, you have other people working with you.
No, that's it. That's all me. Yep.
I'm just taking it as that you're the person. Currently set up in Western Australia. She's a guide dog mobility instructor as well as an orientation and mobility specialist. And she's going to speak to us about how you bring those two particular skills together and answer any questions that you have. Anna, feel free to talk about other things that you'd like to speak about. Canine behaviour, for instance. I know that you do a lot of work in that space. I've attended a couple of your courses, well, sessions at previous conferences, and they've always been really useful. So welcome. And I'm thinking that what we might do is if you wanted to speak, usually the meetings will go for up to an hour, but I'm very happy for you to speak for less than that, no pressure. And would you prefer to take questions during your speaking or after?
Yeah, so what I'm happy to do is I'll give a bit of an intro about myself give a bit of a background about myself and sort of a little bit of the history of my work with dog guides, and then people can take questions, you know, I can take questions during that or at the end. And then after I give a bit of sort of intro and history information, I'll talk a little bit about some dog behaviour stuff like canine consent, which I know that I've tackled that topic as well in the past at the Dog Guide Handlers Conference, and certainly any other questions, you know, whether it's directly related to what I'm speaking about or not directly related, I'm happy to take questions either throughout or at the end. So either, you know, if you're not comfortable interrupting or, you know, having a question during, you can, certainly there'll be time at the end to ask a question. And then just a note on that, that if things are specific to somebody's own dog and the work that you're doing with them, I might not be the right person. You know, it might be a kind of question that's better for your direct instructor, but certainly general questions, you know, and you can float the questions with me and then see whether it's something that's, you know, an easily answered question that I can throw some ideas at, or whether it's something that I might say, you know, head back to your school or, you know, go to a sort of specific session that's dedicated to you and your dog for that.
Excellent. Thanks, Anna. Well, you have the mic.
Excellent. So, my name's Anna, as you've noticed, and my pronouns are she, her. My surname, Gigliotti-Spret, is from an Italian and Polish heritage, which is reflecting my grandparents on both sides. Of my mother and father. And yeah, I found that, you know, growing up with having migrant grandparents, it has given me a good opportunity to communicate well with people with a second language. So that's been very helpful for me. And yeah, as was said, I'm currently living and working in Fremantle at the moment, and just wanted to acknowledge the Whadjuk Noongar people of what this country is, you know, their country. And another little political so yeah, you can tell that, I mean, I don't actually like being political, but I feel like, you know, a lot of my values do kind of sit in inclusion and in diversity and in compassion. So And I've just sort of spent the weekend kind of thinking about how it was International Women's Day yesterday. So I just wanted to mention that. And just holding in mind the challenges that women do face in our society. You know, we wouldn't have an International Women's Day if we didn't have significant challenges. So things like, you know, gendered violence or barriers to employment. And then, of course, when we add disability on top of being female or maybe neurodiversity or gender diversity, you know, they can create other barriers or aspects that can leave someone more vulnerable. So again, not wanting to be too heavy with my with my intro, but just a nice timely kind of reminder to hold that into our hearts. And so, you know, I have met quite a few of you on here. There's some new names in the group who I haven't met, or people who I might have seen online but haven't interacted with directly. You know, I've worked at initially with Vision Australia seeing eye dogs. Well, first I was an O&M. And then got into the seeing eye dog cadetship with Vision Australia. I've also worked with Guide Dogs Victoria, Guide Dogs South Australia, and Guide Dogs WA. And sorry, was that? Oh, that might have been background noise. And yeah, I might have come across people at the Dog Guide Handlers Conference in Brisbane a few years ago as well. So I've got a range of experience in my training, and some of the more unique settings for dog guide training has been doing some client training in tropical far north Queensland, which was, I think it was the month was December possibly. And so we were having to work around the heat of the day. We were doing work early in the morning, then having a break in the heat of the day, and then doing walks in the evening. I've worked in regional Tasmania, and I think that was winter time. I just remember there was a lot of frost on the grass, and having our, you know, gloves on and scarves on, and and dealing with that. And then, you know, lots of bustling city work in Adelaide and Melbourne and Sydney and Perth. And back in 2013, I had an opportunity to volunteer at a guide dog program in Romania for 5 months. And so I can talk a tiny bit about Romania because that was quite interesting, in that it had some really unique challenges. There was very limited access for O&M. So I think, to my knowledge, there might have been one, maximum two people who were trained in O&M, and their training was about 2 weeks of formal learning as an O&M at that time. So very different to our sort of master's level qualification that we hold in Australia. And yeah, really, you know, it meant that things were really limited. Education was very limited for people in terms of independent access and getting around safely. And the capital city is Bucharest, and at that time it had heaps of street dogs, so that made it quite, you know, safety was compromised. There's lots of cars that park on the footpaths, which meant that the footpaths were broken. And when you're waiting at the pram ramp at the intersection, you might have to move out of the way for a car that's using your pram ramp as a driveway so that they could get up there and park. So yeah, it really kind of gave me an interesting insight as to how lucky we have things in Australia. And there were very low expectations for people who had a disability. So, you know, they really weren't expecting anything sort of significant achievement for people, including just getting around safely. You know, that was everything was really a lack of independence. And then while I was there, I was working with a guy, and he was born in 86. And he had lost his vision as a child because he'd eaten food that was contaminated by the Chernobyl disaster. So again, that was just such a really interesting thing to realize that that's a kind of a vision loss that is a result of something that was so specific to an era and so specific to a location in time. So yeah, it was very interesting to come across that. And then also at the time, I had a lot of inflammation in my feet, so I was having a lot of problems with foot pain, and that the man who I mentioned, he was a massage therapist, and he didn't speak English. I didn't speak Romanian. Neither of us had a shared language, but he put his hand on my foot, and whether it was that he felt the heat from the inflammation or puffiness in my foot just by touching it, he just said to me, "Ow," and I thought, "Oh my God, he knows, he can kind of read what's going on in my foot without me having to explain, and without having that shared verbal language or visual language either." So yeah, I thought that was really, really interesting. It kind of, yeah, it's I feel like everyone that I work with, I kind of learn these tiny little, yeah, new little aha moments with so many different people that you're not expecting. So it was really cool. And then, so yeah, then just in terms of the dog training space, I've done some additional training in pet dog stuff. So I've studied through the Karen Pryor Academy clicker training. I've done the Aggression in Dogs Masterclass by Michael Shakaccio. I've attended lots of conferences in dog training, and I've also done Susan Friedman's Living and Learning with Animals course. And the Living and Learning with Animals course is very, very interesting. It's a behavioral functional behavior science lens through behavior analysis. I would highly recommend people to if you are interested in learning something like that. It's a great course. There is a lot of video content in it though, so I guess I think it'd be worth, yeah, if it was something that you're interested in, I think it's worth contacting Susan Friedman, who runs the course, and just checking what the accessibility is like, and if others have already sort of gone through the course, who have low vision or blindness. But it's just a little plug for, so I'm not getting paid by her to plug that. I just think it was a really very interesting course. So then, yeah, I guess my preference in all of those kind of bits and pieces of my intro, in saying, I love working with individuals. I love working, I love traveling. I love seeing different people's lives, and getting an insight into, I guess, the individual world. So I'm much more suited to the one-on-one training than the group training experience, because I really like the idea of just catering to the individual and really kind of focusing and honing in on what you as a person need in your world, rather than kind of, yeah, just general stuff, if that makes sense. And then, yeah, I was in Melbourne for a lot of my life. Then I moved to Adelaide, and then I started working independently there. While I was there, I was also working in a vet clinic for a behaviour vet. So I was one of the trainers working with, dogs with challenging behaviours, like a lot of fear and anxiety, and things like that. So, and that gave me a really good insight into, the importance of our, the health and the well-being of our dogs on how that impacts on their behavior. And I really consider that the vet relationship is essential for a solid ongoing partnership. So whenever I try to look at dog behavior, I really want to look at their health first. So if there's something that's going on with the dog, and you've got some behavioral concerns with your dog, I like to think, well, is there something health-wise that could be going on first? Because if we just start throwing all this training at a dog who's feeling unwell, or if there's, there might be pain, there might be discomfort, there might be dizziness, they might have a headache. We don't know what's going on with them. We don't really want to have to be, trying to kind of encourage them to do, you know, do the training or do the work that we're asking them in to the exclusion of not getting that health, you know, the health checked out. So we really want to treat the health first and then go in with our training. Do you have any questions at this stage, or shall I keep chattering on? Sounds like no questions are coming up, so I'll keep chit-chatting. So now I've somehow bumped my computer. There we go. yeah, one thing that I find is that sort of grates on me a little bit, and I apologize if you do use this terminology as well, but yeah, one thing, you know, I notice is that people will say, "Oh, my dog just does this because they're stubborn." And it's almost like, yeah, what does stubborn look like in a dog? It's not something that we can really. Stubborn might be something different to every different dog. You know, one stubborn dog might be, you know, not listening to you or not coming when they're called, or one stubborn dog might be not, you know, not walking, or one stubborn dog might pull all the time. And so, you know, it's really, yeah, I find that the label stubborn doesn't really kind of get to the heart of what the behavior is. And generally, you know, we might not notice, but all behavior is going to come from some reason. You know, we don't behave for no reason, and our dogs don't behave for no reason. So there would always be a reason behind it, even if we're not sure what that is, whether it's avoiding something or whether it's to get to something that's, you know, useful for them. For instance, you know, if a dog is not sitting when previously they always sat, and now they're not sitting when we ask them, again, thinking back to health, could there be some, you know, hip or some knee pain in there, you know, for that dog? Is the ground surface unpleasant? You know, certainly sort of check if anything's changed. Think about, well, what might have changed? And so, you know, I talked about this in at the conference at in Brisbane. So for anyone who wasn't there, you know, this might be something new, or, you know, if it's re repetition, I hope that's okay. So yeah, we want to always consider their health. You know, in terms of whether a dog sits, do we need our dog to sit, or would it be okay for them to stand patiently? So it might be while we're picking up their poo, or it might be if we're allowing someone to give a pat to the dog, or it might be while the dog is waiting to be fed. So often we're asking the dog for a sit at those kind of times because we want our dog to be calm. We don't want them to be pulling on the lead while we collect their poo. We don't want them to be jumping up for a pat. You know, we want them to be calm, to be patted. And we don't want them to mug us when we're trying to put the bowl down and have them stealing food from the bowl before we place it on the ground. So we want to make sure that we're safe. Now, you know, do they need to sit for all those behaviours? I think if they can do those things calmly while they're standing, then it's not essential that they have to sit. So that's just one example of where we might sort of ask our dogs to do something because we've been taught that in our initial training, which works really well on our young, healthy dog. But then as they age, as things change, as they mature and get more calm, they don't necessarily have to sit every time. If they can remain calm and polite, at all of those times, then I think that's absolutely fine because the end goal is just so that you're safe and the dog is safe and everybody else around you is safe. And then, yeah, I was chatting with some friends about animals giving consent. And so consent with animals is a really interesting topic. I initially, when I first heard about that at a conference years ago, I thought, what is this lunacy? As if a dog can give consent. And by the end of the conference, I realized, oh, yeah, they actually can, So there's lots of times where our dogs will be saying, yes, I'm interested in that, or no, I don't like it. And so there's a lot of different training that people do is, training our dog to want to consent to behaviors. And when we are training in consent work, if we specifically want them to be able to say yes, we really need to also offer that no. Consent doesn't mean they must say yes every time, then that's not true consent. We just have to
How
think.
do you do that?
Sorry?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm just muttering to myself. How do you do that? How do you get their consent?
Yes, it is complex, and I'll give you a couple of examples, and then if you have more questions about it, I'll generally definitely happy to answer them. So really, when we're training and we're trying to get consent, we're training to get that yes, but we have to respect that no. And it's hard, because we're always, myself included, I always think, oh, can't I just get a little bit more? Can I get a little bit more of that toenail cut? Can I, do a little bit more of this procedure that my dog's not comfortable with? And I really need to, pull myself back and say, no, let's just keep this all positive, keep her in the game, and let her say no at that time. And there are times when we can't ask for consent. So in those times, like when it's urgent, we might we're better off not setting up a consent-based appearance or not asking our dog for consent if we know that we actually have to say, sorry, this has to happen today. So I'll go into that a little bit more as well. But one really basic way of testing or, testing out consent is called a patting consent test. So we could hold our hand out near our dog and see if they come out for a pat. If they don't, if they notice your hand and they don't come in for a pat, and if they recognize that that's why the hand is there for a pat, if they don't come closer, they might not be interested in having a pat. If they do come closer and you give them a pat for a few seconds, you can pat them and then stop and just leave your hand close but not on them, and see what they do. So some dogs might just stand still and not come in for more. Often we think that that's a yes, but I think that would be a no. Unless it's a clear yes, I would say that's a no. But if they move themselves closer to you, or they tap you, or they nudge you, we know that's a clear yes, please. I want more of that. I love that. Or some dogs will turn their body and, you might go to pat them on their head and their head shifts away. That's a no, thank you. But then they might come and turn their butt around towards you and, offer their butt for butt scratches. So they might actually find, yeah, you might find that different parts of the body will get a yes and different parts of the body will get a no thanks. And, I mean, some really itchy dogs are going to want to get scratched all the time, because that itching, gives them relief as well. Or, maybe if there's a little bit of muscle soreness, if it's very, very mild, it might feel good to be massaged, or likewise, it might feel quite sore, So if your dog has previously enjoyed hip scratches and then doesn't like hip scratches, maybe that's a dog that's saying, hey, I'm a bit sore on my hips now, and it might be something that you check out with the vet. Certainly if things change, that's another, again, really good time to speak to your vet about their health. And likewise, you might say, oh, my dog loves a cuddle, loves being patted. And then when you go out and about and you're walking in harness, they're not interested in a pat at all. Or when you're in a training session and you're using food and you go to pat them, they might move their whole head away and say, "No, nah, that's not what I'm here for. You know, I'm here for a snack." And so, you know, the timing of when they want to pat is also, you know, that can fluctuate. And of course, what when some one person touches a dog versus when somebody else does. So the relationship that I have with my dog, I can touch her ears, and she's had a whole history. She's a pet dog. She's a complicated girl. She's had a whole history of ear infections, and most of the time, I can give her ears a scratch in a very specific way that I know that she'll enjoy and not be upset by. But if somebody that she doesn't know touches her ears, she's likely to scream like a banshee with the kind of panic. She's it goes absolutely through you. I warn people against touching her ears for the person's sake rather than for the dog, because the way she screams, it sounds like, you know, Blue Murder when I think it's just a panic scream. I don't think you're actually hurting her. But you can see that the trust relationship is there from me. So she'll consent to that type of patting from me, but she might not consent to that from a stranger. So, just being aware that those things, you know, can change depending on your relationship with your dog as well. And then, you know, there's also when dogs are playing with each other, you can also test whether they're consenting to that play. And so, when two dogs are playing, the way you can test that is that you can bring one dog away from the other or separate the two dogs. If you think one is more interested in play than the other one, so we'll just call the dogs Fred and Betty. And so if Betty wants to play heaps and Fred, you're not sure whether he wants to play or not, you can hold Betty back and see what does Fred do. Does Fred go off and sniff? Does Fred go in and run up to Betty and give a play bow? You know, what's his behavior? So if he's running back to Betty straight away and play bowing, then that means, yep, he is in, he's on board with that. If he goes off and has a sniff, he might not be interested at all. He might have only been playing just because he kind of had to, because Betty was all over him, if that makes sense. So yeah, I did that. Myself and another friend, we were both able, you know, both sighted people, both trainers with dogs, had three dogs playing. We were sure that one of the dogs was happily playing. But then when we held the other two dogs back, we actually noticed that the third dog just went and sniffed the grass and took herself away from them. So we realized that she wasn't really enjoying that play. She was just doing it because the other dogs were kind of all over her, and so it looked like she was playing, but really, I think she was just kind of defending herself a bit. But she wasn't, you know, she wasn't snapping or snarling, she wasn't being nasty, so it still looked, yeah, it really appeared like play. And it wasn't until we held the other dogs back that we could see, oh no, actually, she's choosing not to get involved with that. So we certainly gave her much more space, in the playtime there. And then I can talk a little bit about consent training for a vet procedure. And then that's pretty much all of the notes that I've sort of supplied for today, because I just thought I'll, you know, wait for, you know, rather than me just sort of jabbering at people, I'll sort of wait and see how people are finding it, and you know, take questions and see what you'd like to hear about, because I could talk, you know, I can talk on lots of things, so I'm happy to keep chatting. I just didn't want to sort of make it too much of a slab of information just coming from me, rather than, yeah, I prefer it when people are contributing and when it's, you know, interesting for you. So in terms of consent training for vet procedures, so things that we might do is, you know, for example, people might teach their dog a chin rest so that they rest their chin either in your hand or on your lap or onto a towel, and they hold still while we can then examine them. So it might be while we put eye drops in the dog's eyes, or if we're checking their ears or medicating them, or some dogs are able to be trained for blood, giving blood, or having blood taken, all of that kind of stuff. And we certainly don't, if it was something like a lengthy procedure, that would be have to be really well trained for by the time you actually do that procedure. So, obviously if it's something like a blood draw that is hard to interrupt halfway through, you would want to make sure that the dog can cope with that the whole way. Otherwise, we don't train it in a consent-based manner. So, for example, we might be able to train our dog to consent to having their ears looked in, but once they've got an ear infection and once they need medication, they might not be ready for that to be a consent based situation. So if, for instance, with my dog, she is, has a very sensitive ears. So if I, for instance, if I'm grooming her and I'm trimming her hair on her ears, I'm able to ask for consent there, because if she says no, I can just come back to it another day, and see whether she's more happy, tomorrow or in an hour for me to do it. But if she has an ear infection and I need to put medication into her ears, I don't want to be able to say, I can't say, sorry, we'll do that next week when you're feeling better, because she needs to get that medicine in. I did, and so if I did ask for consent and then she said no and I did it anyway, then I'm just creating a lot of mistrust and I've kind of broken down my consent behavior. So I really don't want to muddle with my training. I'd rather just sort of, if I need to get it done, if it's a matter of urgency and it's something uncomfortable and I think, no, she's not going to be happy about this, rather than mucking with her consenting behaviour, I would rather just get it done in a different way and make it look really different to our training session. And so one thing that I've done with my dog is I actually put on a different hat. So I've got a hat in my little medical kit for her, and the only time I get that hat out is when I'm going to medicate her ears. And so I put the hat on, I look at her, I say, I'm so sorry, Maggie, but this has to be done. I go and draw up the ear medication, and then I, put the ear meds in, and then I take it off. I throw it on the ground. I tell her it's all finished, and she does a huge shake off. So she really recognizes, oh, phew, it's done. That's over. And then we run to the fridge together and get something really, really tasty for her. It's roast chicken that she loves the best. So that's what, that's what I do. So I like to follow it up by something that's really yummy as well, just to say, hey, something bad has happened, but something good can happen after that, and kind of give that a kind of end point. Prior to doing that little process with her, every time I walked through the kitchen, which is where the ear meds were, she would dash out of the room and look back at me and wonder, when the hell is that awful ear thing coming on? So she had really generalized that, that bad things happen when Anna goes into the kitchen. And so, I thought, I don't want her panicking all day every time I pick something up in the kitchen that it's going to be about her ears. I don't want her to have to feel like she needs to run out of the room and escape. And so introducing that really kind of clear time of this is when the bad stuff's happening, that really helped her to cope with that and not to let it kind of upset the rest of her day. So that was really cool. Yes. And so, I know some people will ask their dogs the consent to put their harness on. So whether the dog wants to go out or not, do you want to work today or not? That's an interesting one. Because again, if you're saying to your dog, would you like to work today? If they say no, well, what's your choice then? Do you have the flexibility to wait? You might ask them 5 minutes later and they're happy to go. Or you might think, well, what if I ask them 10 times and they say no? So again, just being aware that if you're asking them for something and they say no, can you give that up, can you honor their ability to say no? Or is there a way to do it where you say, all right, look, today we have to go out, so this is our working day. And of course, sometimes, our dogs don't like the harness going on, but they're happy as Larry once it's on. So again, with my pet dog, she hates her, just her pet dog walking harness. But I prefer using that to having a collar where she's going to be pulling on her neck. And I think also it's probably connected to her ear issues as well. She's more sensitive to the harness going over her head when her ears are playing up. And then, speaking of which, she's like tapping and getting, I think she might have heard her name. And so now she's like pestering me. Yeah, but I don't necessarily. Give her the choice that she can't have the harness on. We live in an apartment. She has to have her gear on to go outside to go to the toilet. So, I still try to do it as gently as possible. If she walks away from me, I might wait until she stops walking away, and then I'll walk over to her and say, "Come on, we're going to do this," and pop it on her. And once I get it on, I give her a treat afterwards, which is just, one piece of kibble, and then we head outside, and she's happy. So I try to make it as easy as possible for us without, but it's really not, that's not a consent behavior with my dog because she's not consenting to it. She's just saying, she's enduring it, I suppose. And she knows that that needs to happen for us to go out. But yeah, it's very individual, I think. What works for one dog might not work for another dog as well. So, just because I might say, oh, well, this is a process that I use with my dog or that somebody else uses with theirs, see, well, what works well for you and what works well for your dog. So, yeah, that's pretty much everything that I had planned. How are people feeling about that? And do you have other questions to come through?
Anna, I'm interested in your work that you did in Romania.
Yes.
And the fact that you said there's lots of street dogs, and as we know, dogs are a pack animal. It must be very challenging for people not only having those dogs around the place, but also with the cars on the sidewalks. And just wondering how do they cope?
Yes, I think it's really, really challenging. Certainly in Romania, they have there was some very sad incidences with their street dogs, and actually a small child was killed by street dogs just after I was there. Well, I think it was sort of in the last weeks of me being in Romania, and so the government really, sort of culled the street dogs, and they don't have the same, packs of street dogs that they previously did. And so I suppose that is possibly alleviated a bit, but certainly there's lots of countries who still do have a lot of roaming dogs. And so, it would certainly be an issue for a lot of places. They also had, they had a lot of food left out for the dogs, so there'd be chicken bones on the street. There'd be, stale bread left out. In terms of training, training your guide dogs there, it was really hard. And yeah, we visited a school for children who were blind, and their director of the school, he was totally blind. And I thought, oh, that could be a really good example. Well, he was not a cane user. He was guided by other staff members and colleagues everywhere he needed to go within the school. So, he really didn't have any independent O&M skills. So, yeah, it was really quite hard to see, I suppose, because you can see so much potential, that's being unmet in those places. And I think there's also that sort of cultural expectation that, oh yes, well, if somebody's blind or has a disability, then we'll look after them. The family looks after them, and so you have the person who's, I guess, rendered ineffective and totally dependent because of the expectations put on them. And again, I mean, we see that to some extent here as well, when people are just doing everything for someone because they have a disability, rather than allowing someone to have that autonomy and have control over what they can do.
Anna, this is Margaret. Have you been into any other countries to teach mobility training, O&M or guide dog training?
I haven't. I have, I've just had little tours of some, guide dog schools or seen some of their work. So, for instance, in Poland or in Japan, I've had an opportunity to, go and visit their guide dog schools, but I haven't done actual work in those places. I know some people have. I know in a friend of mine is from Taiwan, and she said all the dogs are trained to wee in the drains because there's so many in apartments and stuff. Yeah, and their dogs are trained to be on scooters as well, like on like a Vespa.
Oh, sorry, where was this?
That was in Taiwan.
Oh,
How did you
wow.
get the dog on a Vespa?
I thought
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure how they how or it might be something like maybe that's their taxi service or something, but I remember seeing that they definitely had like the dog. I think it might be sitting where your feet go, sort of sharing that platform where the feet are, between the front wheel and the seat. So yeah. So there's some really cool things out there, yeah, beyond. Yeah, I mean, I thought really in particular the dogs that are weeing on the drain, the drain hole. I thought, well, that's so useful for when we're staying in a hotel or, not that we should be, not that we're meant to be putting waste in the, storm water or whatever, or the, but yeah, if you need to, then I think that's a really good option. But, we sort of haven't needed to. We're lucky in Australia that we've got a lot of space and a lot of green space. And
Some
yeah,
places we don't though.
that's right.
You've got particularly around the guide dogs, which is interesting at St. Leonard's, you've got just trees with mats around them.
Yes.
Yeah, there is grass here around there, but it's you have to walk a little bit to get to it.
Yeah. And certainly, I mean, it's hard for me when it's stinking hot outside, 38 degrees day, and I have to take my dog straight out onto concrete and onto dead grass that's going to be stinking hot under that dirt, yeah, my dog looked at me the other day like, are you for real? You're making me walk on this really hot surface, because she needed to have a wee at that time, and there wasn't sort of a shady spot for her. So certainly, if you can do that training for to pee in the drain, it would be really helpful.
You haven't trained your dog to wear the
Boots.
boots?
Yeah.
No, I haven't. The harness is, look, there's so much that's challenging with my pet dog that I
Okay.
haven't gone down that. Yeah, she's a standard size cavoodle. She's got behavioural issues. She takes medication twice a day for stuff.
Ah.
She is a complex creature.
So she's a good job for your training.
I know, that's right. Yeah, she teaches me a lot about about everything I don't know. Yeah. Yeah. Reminds me that I don't, she keeps me honest and humble. She reminds me I don't know much. Yeah.
Anna, it's Erica. I was just wondering with the dog consent, I'd imagine a lot of that is observing the dog's body language. How do you do dog consent if you're a totally blind person?
Good question. Good question. But I think, yeah, and I think it might, in some ways can make it a lot more challenging, but in other ways you make it, give a really clear, simple cue. So, something like a chin rest where the dog's chin stays on you until if that chin moves, that's the dog saying no. And so you teach that. So it might be that, when you touch the dog's ear and lift the dog's ear up, if they're not comfortable with that, they're very likely going to lift their head up. And so feeling that, okay, this dog is not happy with that, or asking them then to return their chin to your, to your leg or to your other hand. And then if they are reluctant to it, to if they're slow to do it, again, that might be the dog saying no. So again, like with a paw touch, if we're doing their nails, you could, and again, you might not be, you might not be trimming their nails, but you can still feel that, will they move their paw around if I'm, fiddling with their feet? Will they pull their paw away or will they leave it there? And, once they pull it away, will they return their foot to you or not? And, and or how slow are they? If they're very quick to return their, give you their chin or give you their paw, they might be super, consenting. But if they're very slow with that, that might be them saying, actually, I'm not kind of, I'd like to do what you're asking me, but I'm not feeling that comfortable about it. So, yeah, great question, Erica.
I have a dog, it's Jane here, and every time we get out of a taxi or a car, if she's got a harness or in her lead on, she goes right round the back of the house, but she waits and she will not come in the front of the house, so she waits for me to take the lead and the harness off, and then she dashes around the back of the house, but she refuses to come in the front part of the house.
Okay, and is that only after taking a taxi, or is that when you go for a walk as well?
Yes, well, we walked back from the shop today and she had a harness on and she refused to come up the stairs to the front door. And so I took the lead and the harness off. And she just went round the back of the house, where she loves lying on grass, and she just goes round there, and then she did come in the back door because there was no water outside, because I'd tipped it out. But every time we get out of a taxi or if I've been out with support workers, she refuses to come in the front door.
Gee, that sounds very interesting. Yeah. Did that start recently, or has that
Yes.
always been something?
No, it's recent.
Yeah, and did something happen? That can you think of any reason why she's that started suddenly?
Can't really think of anything other than the fact that she loves lying out on the grass in the sun. Yeah, there's nothing I can think of that actually might have set her off, but every time we get out of a car,
Yes.
it's she will not come in the front door.
Very interesting. Yeah, it's very it sounds very unusual. And as you said, it might be something that she's drawn to. So it might be that she's interested in something in the yard. So she said, oh, now that we're home, I'm glad to get into the yard and go on the grass or, access the water bowl if there's water outside or that kind of thing. Or it could be that she's avoiding something. So it might be, you know, is she concerned about steps? Is she concerned about the leash and the harness kind of bumping her when she uses the steps? Is there, you know, has she been clipped by the front door? You know, is she, so yeah, thinking about those things that, you know, could she be avoiding the front or could she be drawn to the back? So, you know, for anyone kind of listening to this, it's an interesting example where, you know, when we're not quite sure of what is that purpose of the dog's behaviour, we want to try to think, well, yeah, is she, you know, is the dog interested in gaining something like the grass or interested in avoiding something like maybe the steps or the harness feel or, you know, could there be something in her health that impacts you know, so my dog was balking, you know, she was stopping walking up the steps at my apartment a couple of times. And initially I thought it's because the lead got caught. I thought, oh, she's just worried about stepping on the lead or, you know, worried about something because that happened last time. But then I got her checked out by the vet and there is some hip issues that she has. And the vet said it's probably feeling uncomfortable going up the steps because of her hips. And so, but going down the steps, she's never been worried about that, you know, maybe because walking down steps, you're not putting all that kind of gravity on your back end. The gravity is going into the front end. Whereas when you're walking up, there's a lot of, you know, your weight and your gravity going on the back legs. So, you know, so now we walk down the steps and we take the lift back up. So, you know, just thinking about all of those things could be impacting.
She waits for me to take the harness off, whichever harness she's wearing, whether it's a one piece or whether it's the guide dog harness.
Yes.
But and the lead. She has been, if I take the lead off, sometimes she goes round the back before I've taken the harness off. But she's supposed to be tied up because I live in a retirement village. But I mean, she's very good. She won't wander away.
Yes, great. Anywhere. Yeah.
But she just can't wait to get out on the grass and she's got allergies to the grass. So,
no, what a nuisance. Yes. Yeah. Well, thanks for that, Jane. And then Nadia, it's a couple of minutes to the hour.
Yep.
Do we need to, is Zoom going to cut us off or how do we, yeah, do we open up for one more question?
I don't think Zoom's going to cut us off, as Erica, Greg, I'm presuming
no,
it doesn't.
No, it won't cut us off.
So we can do one more question. I actually have a question.
Yes.
And going back to Romania, I went to Europe over the Christmas holidays, so I kind of observed access in its full inconsistency.
Yes.
And I didn't see a lot of people with working dogs at all,
yes,
which was really fascinating. And I went to, like, Germany, Austria, Finland, Denmark and Sweden, and didn't see, I think in all my travels, I was traveling for about 5 weeks, I reckon I might have seen one or two people with a working dog. So I guess my question in terms of Romania is, do they also use Labradors in that country? And
yes.
What is the dog ratio like? Like, are there many handler dog teams in that country? Do you know?
So at the time they had maybe four guide dogs working, I think, you know, so it was a very new organisation. Mm. They now would have a few more, but I'm not sure what their numbers are. Yes, they use mostly golden retriever, you know, maybe Goldie Cross.
Yeah.
Maybe Goldens, purebred, and definitely Labradors. So I would say that throughout Europe, the majority would be Labradors and Golden Retrievers and Crosses. The UK has a very, very large, you know, guide dog program.
Yeah.
Other countries throughout Europe do it very differently. So, There's definitely, a program in Sweden and in the Netherlands. There's a number of organizations in Germany, so they have quite a few organizations, and some of them do use German Shepherds. So I suppose it varies from country to country. I saw one guide dog being used in Vienna once in Austria. And so I deliberately followed them just to watch. Hopefully that wasn't too creepy, but just for a few minutes, like, oh wow, this is so cool, I was super stoked just to see, just to see them walking. Had I been closer, I would have said hello, but we were at a distance. I thought, oh, we'll just have a little sneaky peek, and so that was really cool.
That's what I did in Helsinki when we saw a person getting off a train. We stalked them for a
Right.
tiny little bit. And then there was one person we saw in Germany, but that's it. Like it was
Yes.
just, I don't know whether I was expecting more because I did my homework in terms of dog guide organizations that are, that are located in the countries that I was going to.
Yes.
And I would have paid them a visit, but it was not a good time over Christmas and things. But
Okay.
it would have been really fascinating to talk to people there to see how their training might differ or is similar to what the training over here is, and the dog teams that they have, but we just didn't see that many. It was kind of
Yes.
disappointing.
I know. Yeah. Well, you might have to arrange a different tour. If you want me to be your support worker,
I was just about to say, I feel
yeah.
like a research project is coming
That's
here.
right. Exactly. We can do a guided tour of a number of guide dog programs in Europe or something, but maybe not in the next 6 months, because
Not right now, no.
Not a good
not right
idea.
now. Yeah, I think staying home, exploring Australia is a good decision at the
Absolutely,
Yeah, but
absolutely.
I'm wondering one of the reasons you didn't do it. You have to realize a lot of people don't use guide dogs or dog guides. They tend to use a cane. And look, the population over there has been huge. You have to be lucky to see anyone. Because I've done a lot of traveling too, and I've very rarely seen any when I've been traveling.
Well,
For
I have to say,
sure.
I actually didn't even see many people who were using canes either.
Okay, because
So that was
the one,
fascinating.
yeah, the
Anyway.
place that I did see the people using cane, which of all places was Vietnam. And
Yeah.
I saw one, yeah, and I saw one person near the cane and all the rest hooked onto her and she had guided them. It
Fair
was
enough.
quite interesting. And then I saw two dogs in Hong Kong.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah, it was quite interesting. The Hong Kong one was really cool because I was really surprised to see him there.
Yes, yeah, excellent.
Anna, this is Lee. I lived in the UK for nearly 12 years and got to guide dogs from Guide Dogs UK.
Right.
And I was living in London, and similar to what you were talking about in Romania, they trained London dogs to actually use the gutters for
Oh,
toileting. So, yeah,
excellent.
that's something that they actively do because of the same thing. You're not always going to be able to find a green space in the ditch. And so they train them to use the gutters.
Excellent.
And yeah, I think I never found it that effective, I must admit, because
Lee, you're breaking up.
oh, am I?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know what to do about that.
Keep
Do you want
talking, you're now working.
is it okay?
Yeah.
So I've never found it that effective. I found it more stressful to try and do that. But what I did like about it was that the dogs were less fussy about the surfaces that they did go on, because of the fact that they'd been trained on in gutters and on concrete. And those things, I think they were less kind of fussy about it, which was good. And the other comment I wanted to make was about the stubbornness aspect that you were talking about.
Yes.
I had a golden retriever for 8 years, and he was the least stubborn dog in the world. And I just find it a bit unfortunate that
some of the breeds that perhaps we could be looking to use in Australia have that reputation for being stubborn or highly strung and kind of lumping those personality types into a breed, I think is really unfortunate. But I think my observation is that we tend to do that here in Australia and kind of dismiss that. And I would love to see some diversification of breeds in this country. I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
I totally agree. Yeah, absolutely. I think it'd be great to see more diversity of breeds. I think it's tricky, you know, with the I suppose with all the statistics and the KPIs and all of that stuff that the big organizations need to adhere to. So they really want to see that they've proven those breeds. But yeah, I think diversity in breeding would be great. Particularly, you know, I mean, you meet these beautiful dogs out in the, you know, out in the real world, and you think, oh, that dog could be good as a
Why aren't we? Yeah, exactly. Like in the UK, they're being so successful with
absolutely.
golden retriever cross shepherds. Like they
Oh
are
yes.
hugely successful.
Absolutely. They do a
And
lot of
I
classes in UK.
they do. And you just think, surely, I love Labradors. Don't get me wrong. I've had three, four, four, no, three. I don't know. Anyway, lots of them. And but it's not always going to be the right breed for, what people want to do and the diverse lifestyles that people have. And I do find it a little bit narrow
Yes,
in that way.
absolutely. I agree. I absolutely agree.
And I work for Guide Dogs Australia, so I will tell them that too, just so
Yes,
you all
you
know.
do. Yeah, get the word out.
Oh,
Yeah.
yeah.
I think it's due to funding too, because some of the population are frightened of the shepherds and that, you know, I mean, they're big sort. Really, most of them. But I think
Oh,
it's
I would
that
love for the
perception.
population to be frightened of my shepherd. I
So would
mean, to
I.
be honest, I'm
Yes,
here.
right.
I
Yes.
agree. Yeah.
Yep.
And
Yep.
look, I
It's
think,
all to do
yeah.
with getting the money in, I think.
I
So.
know. I
And
think that.
the health, of the shepherds, the hip health of the shepherds in Australia is really poor. I'm not sure
We
about
have bad
that.
breeding standards here.
Yeah,
But
so
we
that
know
would
that,
be a
and we've
major
known
factor.
that for years. And so why are we not diversifying the breeding lines?
Yeah, and I guess it all comes down to expense. It comes down to justifying where the funds go, you know. So being experimental with funding is not necessarily on the priority list of big organisations. Yeah, so I think we probably need to wrap it up.
Well, can I just say something for a
Yes.
moment, Angela here, and I'm originally from Ireland. The guide dogs in Ireland train their dogs to use the gutter.
Oh,
I've
great.
had, yeah,
Oh.
I've, yeah, I've had four guide dogs in Ireland, and every one of them could use the gutter.
Yeah.
Excellent.
And another thing they do in Ireland is my second guide dog, way back, was a cross between a Labrador and a Rhodesian Ridgeback.
Oh,
Wow.
And she was
Wow. Lovely.
absolutely beautiful, beautiful dog. And also in Ireland,
Dog.
in Ireland they also breed Labradors and poodles for people who have
Oh,
hair allergies,
lovely. Yeah.
which means that they, you know, that they don't have any problem, because some people hair can, you know, give them, you know,
Yes.
irritation and stuff like that. So
Absolutely.
that's what they do. And if you're when you're being interviewed for a guide dog, et cetera, and you have allergies, they will try and get a dog through for you that is a cross with a poodle and a Labrador.
They have
Yeah.
tried that in Australia,
Yeah.
the
Yes.
Labradoodles,
Yes. They
but
do.
they're
They
not
have
successful.
Labradoodles.
I
Yes.
think
They
we're a
do.
bit
They have
breeders
labradoodles
in
in
this
this
country.
country.
Successful in Ireland, because I know a couple of people who've had them and probably still have them over the years.
Yes.
Yeah. But they do train you to use the gutter. They do.
It's Erica speaking. I'm pretty sure Cheng Hock says that Singapore, they've also been trained to use the gutter as well.
Yes,
But
and
what they're not doing over there that we do here is the toileting harness. That seems to be very very just singular to Australia, specific to Australia. I've
yes.
not come across anybody
Well,
doing it.
I must ask one of my friends when I'm talking to them in a couple of weeks, do they train them in the harness? Now, I don't know
No,
because
I don't think they
I
do.
never had it, but
Yeah,
I'll ask my friends.
the toileting The toileting harness has come from that was designed in Japan. So that was shown at one of the international conferences years ago that I went to. And then, Australia, many Australian organisations have adapted that, adopted that into their practice as well. But I can certainly, this is a great discussion. I'm certainly able to come back another time and have another, be a guest in the future. So if that's what
Thanks,
people would
Anna.
like, then
Thank you.
certainly, certainly I'm happy to. And then a tiny little plug for myself, if people do want any
Go do a shameless
sort
plug.
of one-on-one, I know, shameless plug.
Shameless plug, go for it.
If people do want any individualized, sessions with me, and you've got funding for that, I can do that, whether that's online, over the phone, or whether we're in person somewhere. But obviously travel is a lot harder for me to come to. And certainly if people are in WA, that's much easier. Or if you're visiting WA, happy to have a cuppa one day, or have a session, etc. So just
Thank you.
few options there.
Thanks.
Thank
Thank
you,
you, Anna.
wondering, I was one, sorry, Anna. I was just wondering whether you could send the behavior courses that you mentioned
Sure.
to the committee, and if would the committee mind sending that out or posting it on the Facebook
Yeah,
group?
that's a good idea
That's a
because I
very
think
good
the
idea.
Susan Friedman one would be
Yes.
interesting.
Yeah,
Yes.
those names would be really helpful.
For sure. Absolutely. Happy to.
This has been a Dog Guide Handlers Australia audio presentation. If you would like further information on Dog Guide Handlers Australia or like to listen to further audio, please go to our website www.dgha.org.au. Thank you. Do you always have to have the last word?